When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Is episodes once a week not enough for you, or are you looking for more technical information from the Mixing Music Podcast? Well, guess what? Now you can. You can subscribe to our exclusive content and triple the amount of episodes that you get access to. That's right. Instead of the free once a week episodes, you get 3 episodes a week for only $4 a month or $40 a year. Go to mixingmusicpodcast.com/exclusive to get access to those episodes now. Hello and welcome back to the Mixing Music Podcast. I'm your host, DK, and with me, as always, is my lovely co-host, Lavish Lou.
Oh, I am living a pretty lavish life. Actually, not really. But I would say that anytime I build new things for my space, I feel a little more lavish in my space.
Dude, talking about building new things, you built rack gear to put in front of your desk. How did that go? How was that experience?
It is honestly speaking, I'm not trying to downplay it. I'm not trying to upsell it. It actually feels really, really, really nice because behind me is like the normal rack we've had for years in the mix. And it was cool, but having it behind me, I never got to see the gear. And if I did run something to it, I had to run a long cable. Now I have 3 independent racks that are 12U deep with a slight angle on them. And they're actually perfectly long enough to fit my computer, which has a really long chassis, and so does the Equitech. So it looks very clean. The cables are down to a minimum. The patch bay is over to my right, so I can still patch into things if I need to. But aside from that, I've always liked the look of natural wood. So I opted to do a very, very, very fine finish on it and make it really, really sanded down to where it's like polished smooth, but no stain. So it's completely natural, no wood screw, no actual like metal screws or any metal harnessing. It's all just wooden dowels and everything completely smoothed out. Yeah.
Nice, dude. Yeah, it looks nice. Good. And the design is good. You did some slits for the acoustic 7 and stuff.
I didn't do those yet, only because I was running out of time. I had to make it to the playback event with Bryce and
everybody. Okay. But like, I mean, yeah, that's sweet though. Still, you made it. How long did it take you, honestly, and the cost for each one about?
2 days. The exact cost, exact dollar for dollar cost, was $422. And I built 3 of an equivalent size. If you go with Argosy, would have cost me $1,600. Sterling Audio would have cost me roughly $1,700. And even the jam racks would have cost me at least $1,300 to do.
Yeah, I think so,
the cheap company.
Yeah, like RAB costs like $400 or $500 for a single one of those two. So the fact that you made all 4 with $400, I was like, oh, that's not that cheap actually. It's not as cheap as I thought, but at the same time, you're right. In comparison, yeah, that's very cheap.
Yeah, in comparison, it's like 25% to 30% of the cost. Not only that, but it's your own personal dimensions. It's completely custom to you. Nobody has a like model. 2, you get to choose your own rack rails and recess them as deep as you want. So in my case, you know how my computer has those long handles that are like 2 inches off the rails? Mm-hmm. I have that one computer recessed further back. So I was able to just choose out my own personal rails and make sure that everything looks flush next to each other, even if it has a bigger face or not.
Nice. Good for you, man.
Yeah.
Well, that was exciting. Yeah, that must have been a fun little project for you, because I know you love building stuff yourself, obviously. We have a episode that I think is really important. We have a back-to-back episode that I think is going to be important to do together. But the first one that we're going to talk about is sending a client V1 and then also getting revisions. So from from nothing, sending in a V1 and what things that you should be thinking about when sending in your V1, as well as responding with revisions. If your V1, you know, my V1s get accepted all the time, Lou's do as well. But that's not always the case. You know, we want to make sure that how do we approach it? How do we think about it? That sort of vibe there. So first
just remember,
off,
have an ego, get insulted,
take it personally. There you go. That's the secret, is to continue to take everything personally. Every revision request is someone telling you that you're not good enough. And you should lash back out. We're being very sarcastic. Yeah.
Yes.
Anyway, so with V1s, let's get to the V1 first, right? So the most important thing about this, and I think the next episode, I don't want to talk too long about this because I do think that this is going to overlap with the next episode that we want to record. But getting to the V1, the most important thing is you want to minimize the guesswork. Because there is, let's say you have every single skill in the world, right? You are the best mixer in the world. You can still go in the direction completely opposite of the artist. For example, if I hear a song with tons of guitars and drums, I want to beef up those drums and beef up the guitars to make it sound really aggressive. But the artist wanted it to stay relaxed and quiet, right? Didn't want to beef it up. Didn't want to make it so aggressive. And so it's like, even though you have the skills to make it aggressive, like, you still need to pay attention to the emotional intention. So with this, with the V1, the most important thing is to properly talk to the client. Properly talk to the client and make sure that you minimize the guesswork. Do you want it more aggressive? What is the vibe? How much do you like the demo? What are some specific things that you like? And when you ask for like reference mixes, don't just ask what like reference mixes of songs. Okay, we want this song by Billie Eilish. Okay, cool. What parts of that song stands out? Because you'll think it's like, it's the distortion or it's the compression or something like that. But they're actually going to be like, it's the level between the guitars and the vocals specifically. I like how much above everything else the vocals sit. You know, things of that nature. They'll give you specifics. The point is, minimize the guesswork by talking about exactly the expectations, what they want out of this mix, what they want out of the V1. And that way, when you get down to it, you know exactly what they want. Your guesswork is there. And then you're trying to minimize revisions. And oftentimes, the higher up you go as well, you'll notice that they don't want that many changes. If the producer and the recording engineer is good and they've had a budget, you'll realize that like the mix is already 99% of the way there before it even gets into your hands as the mixer. And the more that you do, the more risk that you're taking, the more risk that you're taking that they will deny it or they will reject the mix or they will have revisions to go back to make it sound like the way it used to be. So with V1, again, the most important part, and we're going to keep it brief here, is to just, all you do is just try to communicate with the artist, with the management, get on the same page, and really understand that they have their taste, they're right, you're just providing a service for them. And if they want it to sound like shit in a way that sounds like shit to you, you should still do what they do. And don't do this thing that people do where it's like every beginner mixer has a moment where like, I don't want to, it's so different from what I would have preferred that I don't want to put my name on it anymore. Don't do that. That's dumb. That's such like a way, like that's such a big ego move. First off, like the songs that people usually say that about aren't big enough where it matters anyway. And number two, usually new clients come from word of mouth. So people don't care whether or not your stuff sounded good at the beginning. They don't really care as much as they sounded good, as much as like if they had a good experience with you. So don't worry about it. Don't bring it up. Don't do that. That's like a very big sign of someone that doesn't know what they're doing, or like isn't very well, isn't good at mixing, or hasn't had an opportunity running business. Like that's like the, that's not a big concern to anyone in the regular, in like the real world doing real work. Like that's your ego messing with you. And I know it feels like a huge dilemma. It's not. Just let it pass. Let it pass. I mean, Lou, I know you've had moments like, we've all had moments like that. Like, get my name off this record. But in retrospect, what do you think?
Honestly speaking, like, I like to think of it as a very immature route to go. The more you do this, the longer you've been around. To be honest, I've always kind of looked at it as like, okay, you just flat out told them that you want no association to their record. They just paid you money to be involved and everything. And in the end, even if you end it on a disagreement as far as like what the quality should be moving forward, you just flat out told them like, hey, I really don't like your vision. So maybe don't call me in the future. Whenever you say, don't put my name on it. You know, that's honestly what I hear when I hear people talk like that. Now, with that said, like whenever you get a revision, at the end of the day, it becomes a difference in your ear more than anything. Like if an artist likes their vocals dark and you typically like them more pronounced and bright, cool, give them the darker vocal. To be honest, like it's nice that you give them bright. Maybe you can find a happy medium for them and then you can show them something that they haven't heard before. But overall, you still have to respect the fact that we are a service-based industry. As much as we want to say that what we do as creatives is, you know, unique, realistically speaking, we are service-based. We are here to support those who are looking for us to, you know, do something with their music. At the end of the day, it's not my song. So I'm here to support your vision, make you comfortable with everything. That's where like communication and everything needs to be key. But if in that process of communicating differences, they feel like, oh, this guy literally does not want to be involved with this record. This guy is literally telling me to take his name off. Like, he really just doesn't like my music. I'm cool with just finding somebody else.
Yeah, that is true. Like, with almost every single bad client and experience that we have, that we hear about on the internet and whatnot, it's almost always, remember that time like we asked one of our interns like, hey, like, can you tell us who's had a bad experience with a mixer before? And she talked and she spoke and we're like, okay, what is the bad experience that you had? And every single time she mentioned, I asked for revision and he didn't get back to me on time. He never communicated with me like how much progress the project was had. He didn't listen to what I wanted and he went in a different, completely different direction. Like none of it was actually skill-based. And she had like four or five different reasons. Almost all of it was communication-based. And then afterwards, and I was like, I'm literally not doing this to prove a point. Like I didn't ask her to say any of those things. This wasn't pre-planned, but I said to the rest of the group, because it was a lesson to the entire internship team, I was like, notice how none of those reasons were like skill-based. It was all like customer service based. And then even she was like, oh shoot, I didn't even realize that. Like, yes, with mixing is like at the end of the day, like if you're good at it or if you know what you're doing, the skill of mixing is like maybe less than 10% of it. Like at the, like maybe more than that at the end of the day, but like it's pretty darn close to being less, like it is so much less important than taking the time to like do things, like communicate with them regularly, tell them the progress, to be professional, like regular professionalism, as well as emotional support. Like this song, like telling them this song is great, you're excited to work on them, like and making sure that they know that you're on the same team. Like I'm rooting for you. I want this song to blow up. I think it can, and like, there's like, this is another thing that bugs me too, is like some people will say things like, your song sucks without my mixing. Like that's not good way to get clients. Don't do that.
No, it's actually a really weird way.
Yeah, that's a really bad way to get clients. So in general, just like, you just want to be cool. Hey, yeah, I'm here to support you. I think we can make it better. You know, if we take it, if we work on it together, I think we have a great product. Like what we sell as mixers is not just a mix. It's more about confidence. We sell confidence. Confidence to release the song without any FOMO. Confidence that this is the best work that they can do with this song. The confidence to just release it. Okay, it's done. The confidence to say that it is done now. So that is really important. With any sort of revisions, from V1 to revisions, it's the same sort of thing. Just being not having an ego and not taking things personally and doing your very best to just do the revisions as is, or like, you know, as a checklist of things that you work on together, making sure that they felt heard, the client felt heard, that they feel listened to, and then submitting a revision. And honestly, like, I know it's a joke that people don't like revisions, or like, client sends in way too many revisions. I know that that's like a meme and it's a joke. It looks like Lou cut out, so I'm going to keep talking until he comes back in. But it sounds like it's a joke and you don't want to do it. Everybody's like, you know, it's this thing where nobody wants to do revisions, but honest to God, I swear on my life, your clients will treat you different. They will be more receptive, more open, and you'll have a better ending product, a better ending sound that they like. If all you do is be excited to do the revisions, whether, like, this is something that I say now before we even start, before we even start revisions, is like, before we start the first mix, I'll say like, and when I'm done with this, this is just V1, something along the lines of letting them know, like, and I'm excited to do collaborations to get it to the final stage. Like, I'll get it to the V1. From there, we're going to collaborate, and then we're going to take it to the end exactly how you like it. And I'm here with you every step of the way. Like, we're going to take it to the end, right? And that excitement and mentioning that it's not like revision, like you're asking me to do something I don't want to do. It's this collaboration effort to get it to where they want to go. It provides, it feels, they feel assurance. They feel confidence. They feel that you're on their team. It's all of these feelings combined to help you get to the point where it's like, okay, the mixes are good. We're going to get to the end. I'm there with you. So don't ever feel openly be not excited for feedback, like to despise feedback, to despise revisions, to openly do so, I think is really negative to professionalism and to the collaborative spirit you need to get revisions done and to have a happier client, which in turn brings more clients and also a better sounding mix. So Lou came back. Sorry, I dropped out for a little bit. I don't want to do any editing, so I just kept talking. I hate editing for this podcast.
I don't blame you. I don't blame you.
But the thing that I mentioned that you missed out on is with revisions, even before going into the revision stage, even before going into mix ones, like letting them know, like instead of not looking forward to revisions or like somehow, you know, passive aggressively being like, I don't like revisions. You're taking away from my time, you know, or even saying things like, the part of the reason why I don't like charging for revisions is because it feels like I don't want to do them. And although I think that can be smart at times, like I do unlimited revisions unless you're going too crazy. And then I'll be like, hey, this is the last one. After that, I'm charging $50 a piece if I need to, although that rarely ever happens. But it's the idea that, like, emotionally from the beginning, you want them to know that, like, you like revisions because it's the spirit of collaboration. Like, in the spirit of collaborations, I'm going to get it close to what you want, as close as I think I want with V1. And that might be it. But at the same time, like, I want you to not feel bad. And I want you to know that I've got your back to the end here, no matter how many revisions that it takes. And I want to collaborate with you. And through collaboration and working on these revisions together, I think that we can have the best product and also have a happier client, right? So that's just kind of it.
Yeah, I think it's kind of funny how, you know, I've had this conversation with other people where it's like, oh, you do unlimited revisions. I'm like, yeah. They're like, that's dangerous. I'm like, you know, I feel like it's one of those, like, one person ruined it for the bunch kind of situation in most people's experience where, you know, unlimited revisions is such a big statement, but it's not a reality. Most times your clients, if you did a good job and you honestly listened to what they're looking for in the record and you really excelled at giving them what they're hoping for, then you're not doing 50 revisions. Now, we all heard about the Michael Jackson story where they're on like, what was it? Like revision 90 something. And they went back to like, what was it?
Yeah. Four? Like one of the first ones. Yeah.
But the reality is that's like one of those like 1% situations, like out of 100 projects that might've happened to you once. And because of that, you know, you're not necessarily trying to promote like, oh, I charge for revisions at the gate. Why? Because I used to have clients that did this. It's like, well, I mean, was it that one specific client or did you do that bad of a job and just not listen to the revision notes and or just try to deliver on your own vision versus their vision? Like, it could be so many variables as to what that issue was, but I'm willing to bet that that's not the common. Like, that's probably not the standard situation with your clients. So whenever you promote with unlimited revisions, you know, the funny thing is, I think it should be done with confidence, knowing that you do such a good job and that their experience is going to be so great with you that there's not really a concern of doing 50 revisions. I don't think that's something that's really going to end up happening every time if you just remind people that, hey, I have the mix. I hope you really like this. I really believe in it. I really love how the snare hits on this one and your vocals sound so full. I can feel it in my chest. You know, but in case there's something you don't like, just remember, I don't work with an ego. If you want something different, I'm not going to take it personally. You have unlimited revisions. Let's make sure that this record is perfect for you. And every time they hear me say that to them, they're always that much more confident in whatever I deliver. Even if there's something off, they don't feel weird about letting me know that one thing is off and their experience is just that much better.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Refresh your home today at Menards with window images, blinds, and shades. We have everything you need for updating your window treatments. We carry vinyl, aluminum, and faux wood blinds, cellular shades, and more. Save big on window treatments at Menards. Plus, get them cut to width in-store for free. Visit Menards.com and view our entire selection of window treatments today. Plus, the weekly flyer and other great deals going on now. Save big money at Menards.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. And up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Okay, two things that you made me realize that I want to talk about. One is customer psychology here. Here's the thing. Okay, let me write down the other thing so I don't forget it afterwards. Here's the thing. If you say, hey, this is a mix, we're going to do this thing, and you have 2 to 3 revisions right now, right? And after that, you have to pay for the revisions. So now you're putting a dollar value to the revisions. Like you get 2 or 3 free. Let's just say 3. You get 3 free. Anything after that, you have to pay for. Okay, so revisions cost money. Now, what happens as a customer is, why, if you don't use up all 3 of the free revisions, you feel like you're leaving something on the table. So if you do that, be aware that each customer that hears that option will psychologically be motivated to use up all 3 free revisions, even if they don't need to, because you're offering it. Now, if you say it's unlimited revisions, then they will tell you when they feel like they're done. And sometimes it takes more than 3, right? Especially, okay. And I know, okay, there is some truth to like, okay, if you have cheaper clients or younger clients or less experienced clients, they will ask for more revisions. But I think it is better to think in this, it's probably your fault. And it's not actually your lack of mixing, although that could be it, but it's your lack of confidence. If they keep asking for revisions, it's because you didn't give them what they're trying to buy from you, which is confidence. What you do, it's not a mix that you're selling. You're selling confidence through mixing. So usually revisions come, and this is even at all levels. Revisions come, and they, well, revisions come, one, if you feel like their goals and their taste is not aligned to what you have. And we're going to talk about that in just a second. But they also mostly come if they don't feel confident that this is the best that they're going to get. And that's oftentimes communication, the way that you present yourself, the branding. I don't want to like spill all the secrets.
Yeah, to be honest, I wholeheartedly, I'll say it like this. I agree with the start of it, which is if I'm told I get up to three, and then after that, to pay. Yeah, I'm definitely much more inclined to actually use those three, without a doubt. There's no question in my mind. And there is truth to the idea that, and this is my clarification, this is how I like to justify it. Anytime I have a cheaper client that asks for a million things, it's because chances are they saved up to work with you.
Yeah.
You know, they can't really afford you on just a drop of a dime in a bucket or whatever the phrase is. But the reality is that means that your work ethic and communication and customer service means that much more. It's not necessarily your specific quality that's in question. It's just that we have to sell them that confidence. They spent all this money because they feel confident enough that it's a justifiable cost. But when that confidence comes into question, we have a harder time getting the project off our table because they're not feeling confident. And something we've done has made their confidence kind of waver from where it needs to be. So it just goes back to it. Like if you're offering limitations to the revisions, yeah, they're more inclined to do it. But even if they are a cheaper client and they're more prone to doing it, that just means that they don't necessarily have the budget typically to hire somebody of your caliber at that moment or at your price point. And now that they have, they're really hoping to get their money's worth. And a lot of times that goes back to customer service.
Amen. Yeah. The second thing that I want to talk about is taste. Again, going back to the idea that like assume that we are all the most experienced mixers. We know exactly, like the skill is no issue. Lou and I, let's say that Lou is a client of mine. We grew up listening to different music. We grew up in different places. I like hip hop. You like hip hop. You like R&B. I like R&B, but we both like different hip hop and different R&B. And even if we somehow miraculously love the same exact songs and artists across the board, not a single one is different. The reasons why we like each song and each artist is going to be different. I like the drummer. You like the guitarist. I like this aspect, the rhythmic aspect. You like the melodic aspect. There's so much variation in taste. It's actually fucking retarded if you think that you're like they're coming to you to help them, you know, get closer to their taste, their hopes and desires for their songs, their sound, and you come to them and you think that your sound is superior to than the client's, that's actually dumb. That is actually low IQ. Yes, just because you have the skill, you still need to like have empathy and understand what their vision is and that you are providing them with their vision, not your vision. Now, there's times where you want to convince them, you think, okay, I have a better idea, but like, what is better? That's a risk. And more times than not, especially at higher levels, the more that you infuse what you think is a superior tone over their own notes, revisions, and ideas and communications that you've already gotten from them, they will say that's not it, right? More times than not. Very rarely will they ever be convinced this was better, you're right, because you have different tastes. And everybody has tastes no matter what level they're at. Yes, a lot of the revisions were annoying when I was young. Like when we had just gotten into mixing, the revisions were super annoying. And I was just like, oh, like I can't believe like they want this thing that I think sounds worse. In retrospect, I'm telling you right now, this sounds so stupid. I wasn't good at mixing. And mixing, not as in the use of compression, not as in the use of EQ. I was really good at those things. But I was really bad at being able to understand and see the client's vision through. I was really bad at that. I was really bad at it. And that is the skill that made me a bad mixer. And I'm getting really passionate about this because, like, yes, if you take away this, the value of the skill and the ability to mix, and it comes down to taste, I don't know how people can ever get in this mindset that their tastes are superior. Like, no, they're not. You like one artist, you like one genre, and the other person doesn't. And even if they did like the same artist as you, they like it for different reasons. Respect that. That's what makes them human. And it is your own personal cognitive bias that tells you that yours is superior. There's no such thing as superiority here. And the fact that you can't get over it is why you're a shitty mixer. And it's not because of the compression. It's not because of the EQ. It's because you're incapable of putting your ego on the shelf to align their taste with your mix. Anyway, that's just like, it's something that, like, I'm getting passionate and I'm projecting because that's something that I used to do. And it's like this thing that, like, I wish I didn't. That cost me so much. Like, I lost so many clients because I couldn't do what I so obviously know now. I hope that you don't make the same mistakes as the listener. It's like, yes, you may be thinking, but I'm right though. My clients are dumb. And you know what? If that's you, I'm going to tell you right now, you're not that wrong. They may be dumb. They may have bad tastes, but it's still the wrong way to look at it. And if you've been thinking that, like, if you're like, nobody in my area knows what they're talking about, I'm from this small town in around Minneapolis, and I'm the only, like, guy that does recording. I'm the only person that does hip hop around here. And, like, everybody else who does hip hop has bad tastes. And so it's like, okay, we get it. We know you think that. But that's still the lowest. Like, no, it's still, you should understand that as a reflection of your own thing. It's a reflection of how bad you are as a mixer and an engineer. Like, I want this to be so real and so visceral. Like, you need to understand, especially if you're the guy for, like, the last 10 years has become more and more bitter from the lack of taste of local artists. I only work with local artists. They all suck. And, like, I'm bummed out. Like, if you have any inkling or feeling of that, no, you are actually the one that sucks. And that's hard to understand. That's hard to take. And your cognitive bias, your brain protects you. It is called cognitive bias, and it's practical. Your brain cannot handle the how mediocre you actually are. So it tells you that you're actually better than you are. The Dunning-Kruger effect. This is a form of your brain protecting itself. The ego is practical. But you need to get over it. And in order to get to the next level, you need to understand that it is your fault. You do suck. And to suck is not the lack of compression or the lack of monitors. To suck is the lack of empathy and how superior you think your own tastes are. We all hear that you need to embed your own tastes and sound into every mix. You will do that naturally. You will do that naturally. You don't have to do that on purpose. You will do that naturally, even if you do exactly as the client says. Get over yourself. Stop. That's what's making you a bad mixer. Sorry, I'm getting heated about this because I think I'm, like, so passionate about it.
I feel like we hit everything that we can when it comes to revisions, when it comes to the honest, real world view on it, you know, because the reality is this: revisions, it doesn't matter. You're going to get them whether you have gear or not, whether you have a multi-million dollar studio or you work from home. They're bound to happen. If you got a V1 that goes out of the park, hey, fuck it. It's always a great feeling. We're always happy for that. You know why? Because our dollars per hour just went up. But realistically speaking, like, if you get a revision, just don't stop working with an ego. Stop working like you know better. And the reality is, like, I'll give a good example of this. This isn't a revision, but it just goes to show that taste and perception of music and what might be good, what not might be good, until you try it, you know, you don't know. But I told my wife about the concert I bought us tickets for 2 months ago was coming up. And, you know, she's like, what is it again? I'm like, Escape the Fate, a post-hardcore band. With the, I forget which specific symphony it is, but it, you know, it's the emo orchestra. So it's hardcore music with the symphony behind it. to me, that sounds amazing. And I can already hear what it's supposed to sound like. And I was envisioning and like, oh my God, I can't wait to get there because I'm imagining this grandiose thing and it's going to be amazing. She's hearing it in her head and she's like, I don't know. Like that doesn't actually, how are you supposed to do like double pedals and a fucking violin together? Like what are you taking me to?
Yeah.
Then she hears it last night for the first time. She never saw like Metallica and the San Francisco Symphony or anything. She never saw any of those other like previous concert series that have been around. So she didn't know what to expect. Me having heard it before, I knew what to expect. But after she left the concert, she was like, that was really good. Like that was damn good. She was in the crowd singing along and everything. And it's just one of those where like, you may not see the vision at first. You may not see the potential at first, but your client has it in their head and it's our job to help them get there. We may not agree with it all the time at the end of the day. And sometimes we might've learned something new that we can apply for our own work in the future. But in all reality, just give it a shot. You know, like the best thing that we can do is just respect our client's vision and try to move forward with it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's it for this one. The reason why I'm getting heated is because I'm thinking about all the people where it's like comments on YouTube, Instagram, and like thoughts from other people. These are all thoughts that I've seen. Like, I hate when clients ask for revisions. I want to take my name off the project. I really do feel like I'm the only one in this area that knows what I'm doing and everybody else sucks. These are all like thoughts and ideas that are more common than I want to admit. And partially because I have been through those stages. I don't know about you, Lou, because you've always been in LA where you have the best of the best around you. But I mean, living in areas where I'm not in LA and I like in Utah, it's like you feel like you're limited by the local community because you're not in LA. You feel like there's a glass ceiling. And I'm telling you right now, there is no glass ceiling as far as quality and as far as like taste. And as far as having good products, you are self-imposing those with your own ego. And this is something in retrospect, like it's hard to understand why I know why I did it at the time, but I wish I didn't. It's a big regret. And I know that that's what kept me from doing better. Like I made the right decisions overall and I kept it in check enough to be able to do well as I'm doing now, but I could have done so much better if I consistently never had an ego and learned to work around it and was always in the spirit of collaboration. We did an episode about this with Jesse Ray's newsletter, but I mean, coming back to that, like, yes, sometimes it's frustrating. Yes, but that is the job. That is the job. And I want people like, we hear all the time, like mixing is a service-based industry. It's not like, what does that mean? This is what that means. Like we're not providing a product, a mix. We're providing a service, which is confidence. We're providing confidence. And that can only be gained through a collaborative spirit. Like, honestly speaking. So keep that.
Okay. You know, it's kind of funny. I guess to wrap up on my end, as far as my thoughts on it, you ever see trucks in the middle of the road that high beam everybody and they've got like the lifted chassis and everything? Like it's just like a monster truck, but they don't actually drive it like a monster truck. They're just really douchey on the road.
Sure. Go ahead.
Well, yeah. Anytime I see on Facebook or like Gear Space or whatever, where people are like, oh, I hate revisions. It's just an insult to my work. It's like, yeah, you're like the small dick tiny truck dude on the road. Like you're just making it loud and clear that you got some fucking complexes you need to get over. Oh, gosh. Like I'm just saying that's not BDE right there. That's SDE.
Well, I don't know what those words are.
BDE is big dick energy, and SDE is small dick energy.
Okay, got it.
You know, it's one of those like. Yeah, you seem like a douche.
Yeah. We won't even get into masculinity.
Yeah.
No. That's a whole nother topic that I've been thinking about a lot recently. Anyway, yeah, that's it for this episode. If you want to buy something on Sweetwater, do it with our code. Go to MixingMusicPodcast.com/Sweetwater. We get a little kickback. That's dope. Same thing with like Auto-Tune and Plugin Boutique. Just go to our website, MixingMusicPodcast.com, you'll see that we have sponsors lists. Go click on those. More importantly, if you want more information, you're hungry to learn more practical information, go to MixingMusicPodcast.com/exclusive to unlock over 200 episodes of exclusive podcast episodes that are hidden behind a paywall. They're short. They're sweet. They have two new ones every single week. We only do one exclusive archive every single week, and they're from over like 2 years ago. So be aware. We want you to be up to date with this stuff because it's really good information. James and I, we do a really good job, I think. We have a lot of other exclusive content listeners. So if you're really into that and you want to learn more, and they're all very technical, like how to use a compressor, what are the type of compression techniques, what techniques are other engineers using, we break those down. So, so if you want that, mixingmusicpodcast.com/exclusive. And on that note, happy mixing, my friends, and stay saucy.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Here in America, work is in trouble. We've offshored our manufacturing, sent away good jobs, and lost so much ability to make things. American Giant is pushing back against that tide. They make high-quality clothing for a summer wardrobe you'll love, all made right here in the USA. Support America's workers and get 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, code STAPLE20.